and where's the International Committee of Protecting Journalists? Like, is there anyone who's going to do anything about it?
And what would you hope for the rest of the world to take from your book and your experiences?
So my book is my story and the stories of other people that I meet along the way, and I make sure to mention their story and their name. At some point, the book will make you cry, will make you laugh, will make you joyful, will make you tearful. So I just hope people will do something with all of these emotions, because emotions alone are not enough. Emotions are only powerful when you convert them into actions.
Your book includes the dedication to Gaza: "The soul of our souls, all I am and all I will ever become is for you and because of you." Do you hope to return, Plastia, to Gaza?
Of course, I always hope. Of course, I always hope to return to Gaza. And I find that a very weird question when people ask it to me, because it's not like it's even an option right now. The borders are closed. I can't just go back right now even if I want to. People can't leave even if they want to. And I can't go to any Western country easily. I need a lot of paperwork and visa processes to be able to go. But these people who have powerful passports can go to my homeland. Meanwhile, I'm just stuck in here. I can't go back home, and I can't travel to any country that I want. So I just find it a bit
weird.
We have
to leave it
almost
there.
In every interview, people ask me, do you want to go back?
Thank you so much for being with us, but the show
option.
Is ending. Plastia Alakad, The Eyes of Gaza, is her new book.
KB, oh, Portland.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming. From game nights to conventions, Nate and James share what makes the hobby so vibrant through banter and interviews with local members of the hobby game scene. And if we can inspire a few listeners to join us around the table, all the better. More people to play with. Winner's Bias. You don't have to win to have fun, but it doesn't hurt. The first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service helping those who are feeling sad, struggling with alcohol or drug use, or just need someone to talk to. Trained counselors are able to listen and provide support 24/7. Confidential support available by text or phone call to 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
This is KBOO Portland. And a game you'll always win is going to kboo.fm/give and make your one-time contribution, your influx of financial energy into the arteries of your community radio. You can even have your financial institution give KBOO a few dollars each month on your behalf. That's a game you'll never lose.
And you're playing a game you never can win, girl.
It's a little after 8 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. It's time for Too Much Information with your hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Won't you stay tuned?
All right. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM, and greetings from war-torn Portland, Oregon. My name is Abe Proctor, and joining me as she does every week, Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
We are going to talk about two seemingly disparate but related topics today. But first, an update on what's happening here in Portland vis-a-vis the pending occupation by National Guard troops of our fair city. as of this moment, Tuesday morning, 8 a.m., there are no National Guard troops deployed on the streets of Portland. A series of two court rulings over the weekend has forestalled those deployments. So as of now, our streets remain, however war-torn and devastated, unoccupied by National Guard troops or active military troops or any sort of military personnel. Over the weekend, you probably heard something about this, Tracy. It was it was in its own way entertaining, but also grim as sort of a harbinger of these times. A federal judge, Karen, her name is escaping me now, Karen Emmergut, appointed by Trump during his first term, ruled first against his federalization of the National Guard's troops from Oregon being deployed in Portland. That ruling happened late last week. Over the weekend, the administration tried an end around to get by that ruling and attempted to send National Guard troops from our neighboring state of California to the South. Judge Emmergut was not pleased at this attempt to bypass her ruling and held an emergency hearing over the weekend in which she barred that deployment of troops, that from California or from any other state, and chastised the administration for what they're trying to do. Here's a quote from her ruling. "This historical tradition boils down to a simple proposition. This is a nation of constitutional law, not martial law. Defendants have made a range of arguments that, if accepted, risk blurring the line between civil and military federal power to the detriment of this nation." So here, once again, we have an officer of the federal court acting as a stopgap between the Trump administration and its darker impulses. I suppose we should be grateful for that and hope that it can last, though usually this administration manages to find a way around these things. Tracy, I swung by the South Waterfront towards the end of last week just to take a peek at what was going on, and it looked much as it has for a long time, largely peaceful, a small, in fact, entirely peaceful while I was there, a small number of demonstrators gathered near the facility, and that was about it. So again, one's forced to wonder why do we need troops in our city?
I mean, this narrative is just—I mean, it's straight out of 1984. Like, what are we even talking about? We are being told that what we're seeing and what we're experiencing in real life is not actually happening. That Portland's burning. Sunday morning, I woke up to that tweet from the president. And he is on CNN talking about how Portland is burning. And I'm like, wait a second, it's like sunny out. There's not even clouds out. What are you talking about? I proceeded, to do things in the day. Went, past downtown on my way to wine country. I was on my way to Dundee to, of course, pick up some wine. And... you know, there was the tents up for the Portland Marathon, a ton of people out, beautiful day. I mean, it's just a beautiful fall October day in Portland. And I'm going, what is he getting out of this narrative? Like, what is he pushing? And we know what he's pushing. He's trying to create a narrative for the rest of the country to believe that there is a reason to deploy the National Guard. Now, he has unsuccessfully tried to deploy the Oregon National Guard. Didn't work. That was blocked. Then he tried to deploy the California National Guard, which was responded to by Gavin Newsom with another block. And thirdly, the Texas governor, Abbott, said, oh, well, you can send the Texas National Guard to Oregon to help secure the city, which was also blocked, right? So we're talking about... A little bit of collusion, right? Because it's illegal. There is no reason to do this. It's illegal, once again, for the Trump administration. The law is a mere suggestion. But it helps get to the point where Trump is trying to go, which he said yesterday is declaring the Insurrection Act, that there is an insurrection in the United States that requires... in the United States military response, so you can move to the next point of that, which is declaring any elections that happen here or other places invalid, canceled, not having them, right? Because there's so much widespread destruction. And it's just, I really worry for the people who are believing this narrative, because they're not very bright. But people have been posting for now at least a week or two since Trump started this ridiculous narrative, that nothing is happening. I mean, even the frog who was gassed on the South waterfront in front of the ICE facility was just standing there. Once again, right? So it's not a riot until the police come. It's not a riot until ICE shows up, because they are the ones doing the violence. And we have currently the insider in chief and Donald Trump just is fomenting this, really, fueling the flame that he's saying that Portland is burning from.
Now, yes to all of that. We mentioned that these demonstrations have been peaceful at the ICE facility at the South Waterfront here. That is true. That does not mean that they have been without conflict, however. There are videos posted all over social media of altercations between protesters and ICE agents in front of the facility there. And what is notable in all of these videos, all of them that I saw, was provocation on the part of the agents. Now, the Oregonian, to its credit, and I don't often give the Oregonian a whole lot of credit, has been doing a good job of covering this and has gone out of its way to note in its reportage that the protests have been peaceful and that the provocations have come from the agents themselves. And the Oregonian itself has posted videos on social media accompanied by captions that make this very point. So that may or may not prove noteworthy in the long term, but the city's newspaper of record is reporting things accurately and noting that the provocation is coming entirely from the side of the ICE agents. So where does that leave us, Tracy?
I mean, it leaves us to dig a little deeper, because we know what Trump's ultimate aim is. And we know that he is, because if you've listened at all to Stephen Miller on Fox News and other news outlets, which I continue to wonder why this unelected person is given that much airtime, but he's really, if you listen to what he's saying, mini Goebbels, and what the president is saying, it's an echo, right? So the president is also not that smart. He's echoing what Stephen Miller is telling him are the talking points, which is surprising that he could remember them, but he's saying them. He's piecing them together somehow. But Stephen Miller is the architect of all of this, right? Because he is a student of Nazi Germany. He knows that the burning of the Reichstag, right? He knows that the way in which Hitler came to power in Germany was by creating false narratives and then inciting violence in kind of the more progressive holdout places in Germany, and then saying, hey, German citizens, this is why we have to stop this, right? This is why we need the people to come in and put these violent rebels down, right? This is why we need to create a Gestapo. And what's interesting, someone said it on social media, which I was like, whoa. But, you know, it's funny how, you know, ICE agents and the Proud Boys don't ever show up together. It's kind of like how Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus are never seen together. I was like, what? Clever, but yeah, huh, interesting, right? And of course, the people that would sign up to be a part of ICE absolutely are of the same thinking as Donald Trump, right? Immigrants are bad. The reason we don't have nice things is because immigrants exist in this country. Of course, by extension, that also includes black and brown people. But we have been seeing some of the Patriot Prayer type folks agitating as well, trying to incite violence. We saw Nick Sortor, who is a far right social media content creator, also being arrested. And Nathan Vasquez, the current DA of Multnomah County, dismissed the charges. He was charged with misdemeanors because he was also trying to incite violence, get it on camera, post it on social media to continue fueling this narrative that there is something specifically going on in Portland. And what I will contend every time anybody asks me that, what's going on in Portland is what they don't want, wokeness, right? People who understand how the systems are being built, people who are of all different backgrounds, including, right, white people, older people, younger people, black people, Latino people, Asian people, right, all people showing up and saying, absolutely not, not on our watch, we're not doing this. And it drives Trump crazy. There's also an element that I don't think we talk about very often, and I want to have a nuanced conversation today about that. But, you know, Portland is the least churched place, I believe, in the United States. There are churches, absolutely. There are people of faith. There are amazing people of all different backgrounds. But there is a current, right? I tell people all the time, atheists, we're gaining in numbers. Every time we see something real funky happening in the church, we see, you know, the headlines of church leaders touching butts. We see, you know, corruption happening, scandals, people, you know, taking the parishioners' money and buying their, you know, next multimillion-dollar home. Like, we're hit. And so Christian nationalism has not been something that can fuel connection to Trump in this part of the world. And I think that also is something to note, right? The connection between this current level of fascism and the way that they have co-opted Jesus and God and the Bible to profess that's why they're doing what they have to do, whether that is Pete Hegseth basically saying that, you know, as a Christian people, we are a Christian nation, and we must take it back by force if have to, right? Like, what? The whole God, guns, and Trump, you know, kind of trope that, you know, God has bestowed us with Trump to make sure that we get to keep our guns. And of course, right, we continue to see this heightened number of mass shootings in our country that the current president and others will try and make into political chips, right, to you know, curry favor, but has said nothing about the guns, right? Like, all of that is we've been impenetrable to that narrative, I think, and I think that also is something to note. The connection between white supremacy, co-option of religion, because I'm not going to say it's actual religion, right? It's like taking bits and pieces of religious notions and layering them on top of white supremacy, and then layering on top of that fascism, right? So you get Christo fascism. And it hasn't stuck. What was interesting also, I must say this, and I'll turn it back over to you, Abe. On Sunday, as I'm going into wine country, there was a small demonstration in Newburgh, and I just started crying. It was a small demonstration of people in Newburgh, Oregon. And I talked crap about Newburgh, Oregon last week. Not real crap, but my friend who lived there and was scared to go to Portland. But there was the most beautiful demonstration of people rallying for Palestinian lives. And it was moving to me and caught me off guard. But what I will say is not just Portland, but Oregon as a whole is being targeted because we are a stronghold of people who believe in human rights, believe in civil rights, who believe that, you know, people who exist in different kinds of bodies and love different kinds of people and have different kinds of skin and hair and lips and noses all should be able to exist peaceably in the same place. If we were to focus on the real things, right, that the enemy here is very rich people who want us all to fight each other for their scraps.
Oof. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'm glad you brought up this the connection between Donald Trump's rise to power and the Christian nationalist movement, because there's undeniably a connection there. And it's one that you can trace in quite a linear fashion from the political activation of the religious right in the 1970s and 1980s, the evangelical right's complete and total endorsement of Ronald Reagan and the appropriation of their religious nationalist beliefs into the platform of the Republican Party. And that connection has only grown more close as the years have gone by, and the political polarization within the ranks of the religious right has only grown more pronounced in that time. And I think we should be careful here to mention that we are talking about a specific strain of Christianity in the United States, a Christianity that favors a certain group of people. So this is not to say that if you call yourself a Christian, that we are necessarily lumping you in with the Christian nationalist movement that we're going to be describing today. That's not the case. There are, of course, many Christians who actually try to live their lives according to the teachings of Jesus, and who follow Jesus' directives to help the poor, to heal the sick, to provide for the needy, and live Christian lives, as it is, that term is broadly understood. The Christian nationalist movement, in stark contrast to this, exists for a very clear and overt end, and that is to dismantle and really smash the existing power structures of the United States and replace them with something that will achieve a number of outcomes, first of which is the maintenance and the extension of white male Christian patriarchy. And the second is to make sure that nobody else is ever able to challenge that preeminence in our society ever again. These aims have been made explicitly clear in any number of settings. But it's important to note, and I think what's of use to us today in our conversation in the context of what's developing here in Portland and in other leftist and liberal cities across the nation, is that this devil's bargain, and I think that's a particularly apt term to use in the context of this conversation, this devil's bargain was struck a long time ago. And that there are people who see no daylight between their aims as Christian nationalists, which is to reestablish this nation on what they believe was its founding principle. You've probably heard this many, many times in the media. America was founded as a Christian nation. That is a statement that is categorically untrue, but nevertheless, it animates this entire movement. So to reestablish the United States as a Christian nation and to preclude the worship of other faiths that don't align with their own. And also, as we're seeing through the actions of people like Stephen Miller, to purge the country of those sorts of people that they find undesirable. And in Donald Trump, as ironic as this statement may sound, in Donald Trump, Christian nationalism has found its avatar. Perhaps the least Christian man, the least religious man, the most profane man you will ever meet in your life has laid down with his people and is now their standard bearer. Once again, Tracy, up is down in the United States of America.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are exactly what you said. There are people who are naming this, and they are of the faith, right? And so for me, what the founders, right, I always go back to the founders, of course, problems, I mean, so many problems with what the founders actually said. But they did establish this as a country where you did have the freedom of religion. They also used the Bible themselves in a Christian nationalist way to justify stealing people's land and stealing people's bodies, right? So you know, if you say this person isn't a person or that person isn't worthy of the same, you know, treatment as other persons, and literally persons was the word that was used in the Constitution to describe enslaved people, problems abound. I'll give you that. Please don't call me and tell me, oh, well, the founders. No, I know. However, freedom of religion is a part of the foundation of this nation. And there are people in the Christian nationalist space who will say it should be illegal to practice Judaism. It should be illegal to practice Islam in America. These are the people that scream about Sharia law and all this other nonsense. They don't have any idea what that actually means. They don't know a lot of things, most of them, because they've been fed complete garbage about their own religion, and it does not follow any of the teachings of Jesus Christ. So it's just amazing. So there's a reverend, K.W. Chaffee, who has been fighting Christian nationalism for quite some time, and he just says it doesn't represent Jesus. Christian nationalism is the fake piety of displaying the Ten Commandments in classrooms while passing laws that grind the poor into dust, abandon the sick to their suffering, and turn away the hungry at the door. It clothes itself in the name of Jesus while spitting on his gospel. It is not Christ, it is Antichrist. And, you know, when we talk about that, right now we have the same people who said, you know, we want to preserve the life of unborn babies. This is their language. It's not true. It's not scientific. But we want to preserve the life of unborn babies by abolishing abortion in this country, stopping people from, you know, performing abortions, by attacking doctors and clinics. And they are trying to strip everyone of their health care benefits by trying to roll back the Affordable Care Act, right? So, I mean, this is just a snapshot, right? Also, the people who, you know, Jesus practiced a message about nonviolence, right? These are the people who are cheering on ICE beating up citizens, right? These are the people who are excited to see, quote unquote, the leftists get beat up. Is very Antichrist, very Antichrist. And Donald Trump, right, is as an avatar of that, and knowing his history is just like, what are we talking about right now?
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I think this misconception of the role of Christianity in the fabric of American life is, it's not new. This is not new among Christian nationalists. And I think it's not new even among people who don't consider themselves to be Christian nationalists. This statement, we've all heard it a million times. America is a Christian nation. Well, no, it is not. And Christian nationalists point back to the founding period and say, they look at all the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. They look at all the people who were at the Constitutional Convention, and they talk about how many of those people were Christians. But that, I think, is to miss entirely the point of the First Amendment to the Constitution, which is Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or the free right to practice it. That is absolutely clear. That says two things in the context of religious observation. First, that you are free to worship however you please. If you want to worship one God or many gods or no God at all, that is your choice. You are free to do that. And secondly, the other side of that coin is that you are free to not worship as you please, and you are also free to not be subject to the dictates of the prevailing religion. Now, when Christians and Christian nationalists talk about America being a Christian nation, they say the majority faith in the United States, the one that's followed by most people who consider themselves to be religious, is Christianity. And that is a true statement. But that does not mean that the United States is a Christian nation or that we have any official religion at all. We do not have any official religion at all. And if you go back to the founding generations, you can find so many writings that back up the wording of the First Amendment. There is Thomas Jefferson's letter to the Baptists of Danbury, Connecticut, in which he talks about a wall of separation between church and state that he hopes will endure forever, and that never the twain shall meet. In the Treaty of Tripoli, 1797, during the presidency of John Adams, the United States made peace there with the city-states of North Africa, Muslim city-states who were pirates, the Barbary pirates, as they were collectively known, and were preying upon American shipping. And in the Treaty of Tripoli, signed by none other than John Adams himself, is a statement saying that the United States is in no way a Christian nation and therefore cannot have any sort of beef with any Muslim nation because, you know, religion just isn't our jam. So this notion that we are inherently Christian and by rights ought to be officially Christian is nonsense. It has no basis in fact. It has no basis in the documentation of the founding of our country, and it has no basis in subsequent legal rulings, judicial decisions, or legislation passed in the United States. Although I ought to caveat that last part by saying there have been many attempts to pass legislation in the United States that would enshrine Christianity. But these efforts have been successfully pushed back every time. But it is the goal of the people animating the Christian nationalist movement right now to tear down the wall of separation between church and state, to enact their own brand of virulent, hateful Christianity, and to purge from among us those people they believe to be undesirable. And the subtext to all of this, Tracy, and this is, I'm sure you're acutely aware, to put men firmly back on top of the pyramid and make sure that everybody else remains subservient to them. Did I get that right?
There are women that are part of this. I promise you, it's not just the men. The women who are part of this, I'm talking about the Paula Whites of the world. It's not about necessarily men. It's about a small subset of people in America who crave power, who are using this to amass more power and more wealth for themselves under the guise of being Christians, right? But nothing that they do is Christian, right? So when we start talking about the teachings of Jesus Christ, which I know very well, it was about doing, right? Doing for others, caring for your neighbor, creating community, caring for the downtrodden, right? Like, so what they're doing is not any of that. And so you can tell that they're not actual Christians. But there are women in that movement. There were women in the movement to strip other women of the right to choose what they do with their bodies, right? I will say those women very much know what they're doing too, and they're amassing power for themselves as well.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's talk to Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning. So Christian nationalists aren't really Christian. They're not really practicing Christians, I guess you could say, or at the very least deep thinking. Polls have been taken of, you know, like the people who are most susceptible to the idea of Christian nationalism are essentially just kind of like fair weather Bible believers, you might say. But I think more importantly to focus on is that, you know, Christian nationalism really isn't about Christianity. It uses the veneer of Christianity, but it's actually based in what's called palingenic ultranationalism. So it's like a mixture of like national rebirth through violence mixed with like a jingoistic sense of like nation state and, you know, a very chauvinistic thing of nation state. And essentially they're not worshiping God. They're worshiping the United States. You know, it's a lot of the people see, America as the last bastion, so to speak, of Christianity, but even their Christianity is just white supremacy with a different name. But I think it's kind of silly to call people who believe in it stupid, because like they're not, I live around a bunch of MAGA supporters, and yeah, you know, a lot of them they definitely hold racist beliefs, but like the problem is that like so many people have been so immiserated by the government through shipping jobs overseas, through the destruction of unions, the removal of low income housing, all these things that have been a part of just America doing business for the last 60 years, regardless of who's in power, has made it possible for televangelists essentially to become the new thought leaders because they are given no way out. So they retreat into fantasy. They retreat into a false sense of nationalism, a false sense of self. You know, it's the way that you break these people out of it is have to start meeting their immediate needs, because they're chasing ghosts. They have no way to fulfill what they really need through this, you know. And Fred Hampton, you know, when the Panthers were calling America fascist in the 70s, which they were right on based on historical materialism, You know, they were slaves to dudes carrying around Confederate flags that you can hang as many of us as you want. You can kill as many of us as you want, but you're not going to fix your situation one iota. And that's what I tell a lot of these people. You know, when, you know, when you have people, it's like, how do you, like, you killing me will get you nothing. You can do it if you want to, but, you know, you're still going to be broke. So what's the real deal? What do you really need? And that's what none of these politicians are addressing. You know, we saw a class consciousness coalesce around, you know, the you know, the killing of that healthcare, the healthcare CEO, because people ultimately understand who is immiserating them, and that's why even Fox News had to try and drum up sympathy for this dude, because at the end of the day, these guys are fascists, and fascists protect corporate profits, and whoever's protecting the fascists are the people who we need to be worried about. And let me tell you, it's not just, you know, we gotta get rid of this whole thing. You know, it's gonna start bit by bit, but we have to start organizing people on the basis of workers and start meeting their needs. I mean, that's really what it is, because the Democrats have proven themselves feckless, although hopefully Chuck Schumer has a backbone for a little bit longer and keeps the government shut down, because, you know, He's the reason why we're stuck in part of this mess in the first place. But, you know, the Democrats at the end of the day are not effective, because they protect the money class, and the money class is who funds all of this stuff that we're collectively fighting against. So, you know, tactical support for the Democrats where needed, if you feel like you can support them. But at the end of the day, we need to get on board with a workers' movement. It's not, we've tried to solve this already with the two-party system that we have, and all it does is create the potential for the rich to reclaim the money that had been appropriated for the betterment of all communities, because they don't see that. Their morality says, I need every dollar that I can get, and everybody that gets killed in the process is a death that is worthy of our cause. You know, they see all of us as stocks. They see all of us as numbers and lines on a graph and a pie chart. So any political party that protects that is not worthy of our time. So, you know, that's why we need to get away from these corporate owned parties. So
agreed. I think we're gonna leave it there. Thank you for the call. I really appreciate it. I think Schumer's got one more strongly worded letter in him. Let's not write him off quite so soon. Listen, thank you very much for the call. And Tracy, I think Santiago, hit on something incredibly important there. You know, and what drives the union between Christian nationalism and capitalist fascists. And that is intimately bound up in both prosperity of capitalism and the dogma that animates Christian nationalism, and that is something called the prosperity gospel, which arose out of a strain of Calvinism, which essentially says that we are all predestined towards one fate or another. And if you are wealthy, and if you are materially prosperous, that indicates the favor of God, and that God has predestined you for that fate. And if you are poor, and if you are immiserated, then that means God has predestined you for that fate. And the only thing, according to these people, that will reconcile all of this in the end is faith in Jesus Christ as the avatar, as a standard bearer for America, the Christian Republic. And in the end, when we all go to heaven, we will once again all be equal in the eyes of God, even though you may have been predestined to live a miserable, immiserated life. This is just so pernicious. It's hard even to get deep enough to describe how pernicious it is. If you're able to say, I'm a wealthy oil executive, for example, but I believe in Christ, then I can feel comfortable going to bed at night in my huge mansion, knowing that this is all a sign of God's favor around me all the time. And all these poor bastards who suffer because I'm hoarding so much wealth, well, that's just God wants it that way as well. It's really handy, isn't it? If you're a rich Christian, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I, you know, I can see part of what Santiago is saying, and I have the counter narrative, and Lyndon Baines Johnson said it as well as anybody could. I'll tell you the truth. What's at the bottom of it is if you can convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pockets. Hell, give him somebody to look down on, and he'll empty his own pockets for you. This is what I'm talking about. It's not just, oh, well, they don't know who. They know. They know who. They know what they're doing, voting against their own interests. But no, they aren't. Their interest is white supremacy, and they will always side with that because it gives them the notion that they are specialer than other people, even if they're hurting. Right now, Trump is talking about giving bailouts to the soybean farmers because nobody in China is buying soybeans from the United States because Trump exists and those stupid tariffs, right? And those same people, even if they get a bailout because they think that they deserve something other people don't and that they are specialer than other people, they will continue voting Republican and picking their own pockets. This is what I'm talking about. Until we address the white supremacy in this culture, in this nation that is connected to this, you know, sense of godliness, and I am specialer than other people because I believe these certain things, we will not get to a workers' party. We won't. We have to address the elephant in every room. I say it every week.
It's true. Well, first, love specialer. I think we should keep using that as often as possible. And second, what you described here, I think is a nut that's particularly difficult to crack. When someone's racist worldview is undergirded by religious dogma, that seems kind of impenetrable to me. What do you say or do with someone who believes that way? How do you lead them towards enlightenment?
Guess what? That's the whole purpose of diversity, equity, inclusion, training, learning about belonging and inclusion. That's about learning about the true words of Jesus Christ, right? The true gospel of Jesus is to care for others, regardless if they look just like you or not. Regardless if they're, you know, rich or not. So it's about getting back to, like, the core of this nation and its original, right, the words we put on paper, let's be true to them. But we can't be true to them because we have people who are intentionally trying to make things like DEI illegal, who are intentionally fighting back against wokeness. Woke just means that you are aware of who's doing the harm. You are aware that the biggest threat to this country is not immigrants. It's not black people. It's not brown people. It's rich people who are stealing from all of us.
Amen to that. 503-231-8187. Kalani, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
I appreciate the topic that you guys bring up. As always, you know, anybody who's on the fence, please donate to KBOO. Find the donate button. Send them some money. Especially if you're of that 10% of people who have extra money to throw around. I was just thinking this morning as I was listening to you about the role that Christo-fascism played in indigenous people's lives, because it was very significant in my family. My relatives ended up in boarding schools, better called concentration camps or extermination camps, where religious extremists regularly beat them and deprive them of nutrition and cut their hair and force them to abandon their culture and language and embrace a form of Christianity. And these reform schools were funded by the federal government. Specific churches were designated different tribes to go and proselytize to. And you can still see the results of that all throughout the country. Depending on which nation you're relating with, you'll find a heavy presence of the church that was designated to them. So for my ancestors and my direct family, it's the Shakers Church. That's who the federal government sent out to the West Coast to subjugate the people. And, you know, Christo-fascism has been here. The problem is that it's now beginning to encroach on everybody else. So in my lifetime, and this is the real reason that I called, in my lifetime, we gained religious freedom as indigenous people. It wasn't until 1979 that the law was even brought to the Congress to say indigenous people can have their spirituality. And I was 3 years old. So, you know, Christo-fascism has been imposed on Native people since the very beginning. And now it's gained such popularity and such prominence in society that it is encroaching on the atheists and the Muslims and the Hindus and the Jewish people. And so anyway, one last thing about Christo-fascism is that Christo-fascism was used as a method to steal indigenous people's land. And I guarantee in the immediate future, you're going to see what happened to us happen to you. What happened is, if you weren't a Christian, and this is going to sound familiar to students of history, you were considered a heretic because you couldn't think in a way that a common, rational person would. And as a result of that, you could be put in a mental institution. And everybody should learn about the history of mental institutions and their use in the United States to deprive indigenous people of our land. Because a prominent property owner would be declared a heretic, forced into an institution and have their property stolen. And the people once institutionalized would do labor for the church because these mental hospitals were run by the church. Sound familiar? Our hospitals are still run by the church. And then inside of the church, inside of the mental institution, you would farm the land and your labor would be used to bring in crops to feed the colonizers. Sound familiar? That's because indigenous people still bring in the crops to feed the colonizers. So in the immediate future, watch for Christianity to become the official religion of the country, and watch for a modern inquisition, because essentially that's what the Klansmen did, was an inquisition. That's what the boarding schools did, was an inquisition. And they're going to do it again. So, you know, I in my heart of hearts anticipate them repealing the Native American Religious Freedom Act and saying, taking away our birthright citizenship and trying to deport us to somewhere, because the president's already said he wants to do that. So anyway, Christo-fascism is horrible. Indigenous spirituality has been here for tens of thousands of years, and they use Christo-fascism to deprive us of land and culture. So they're going to do the exact same thing to you. Believe it. Because they love to.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the call, and thank you for reminding us of just how far back and how deeply this all runs. Really appreciate your call. Thank you. Heavy words from Tawazi there, Tracy.
Well, I mean, I think we've had a show when there was that in Canada, Kamloops, Canada, about 215 children's bodies were found buried without headstones in a mass grave from the Christian school in Kamloops, Canada. A long history there. And, I mean, the Christo-fascism was part of enslavement, right? There was a whole different Bible that was printed for slaves. And that Bible was, the slaves who were able to read that were the only ones who were able to read, because they were reading, you know, a book that substantiated why they should be enslaved, why they were the proper people to be enslaved, and why they should participate in deference to their slave owners, right? I mean, it's a long history of the United States. Same like I was saying, the founder said, we have freedom of religion in this country, and on our money it's printed, in God we trust, right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah, and Tawad really got me thinking here, too. I mean, if you go back to the very early stages of the colonial era, Portugal and Spain were the first European nations to really get going in the colonial game. Spain in particular with a religious fervor that was inspired in large part by the fact that Spain had just recently thrown off a long-time occupation by North African Muslims. And so in creating the colonial empire, were avidly and fervidly spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ as part of what they saw as their holy duty to bring enlightenment and salvation to the godless state of peoples they encountered in the course of erecting their colonial project. And I mean, Tawazi was absolutely right. This goes way, way back. The Spanish, notoriously in Mexico, for example, smashed the indigenous religions that were practiced there, destroyed everything from holy writings and relics to the various substances that some indigenous sects would consume in the course of worship, doing everything they possibly could to erase the indigenous spirituality that preceded the coming of the Europeans. Portugal enjoyed an incredibly profitable trading monopoly with Japan for a long, long time until they were finally booted out of Japan. Why? Because they got a little bit too aggressive in trying to convert Japanese to Christianity. And so this animating, this spirit that has become modern Christo fascism in the United States has been pushing the entire colonial process for more than 500 years. And I think we need to understand this. And we need to know how deep these waters go. And as you just mentioned, Tracy, and as Tawazi mentioned in his phone call, Christian doctrine has been used to justify some of the worst abuses and the most inhumane practices one can imagine here in North America and elsewhere during the whole colonial project. Slaves, enslaved people in the United States, the white Christians, the mostly Protestant white Christians in the American South, who profited from slavery, said that it was better for enslaved Africans to be enslaved in the United States and know Jesus than it was for them to have remained in an darkened state back where they came from. This was literally an improvement to be yanked across the ocean and then enslaved by foreign masters. This was better for your immortal soul than to have remained where you were in the first place. This is so offensive on so many levels, and we're still living with it today. I'm at a loss really about what to do about it.
I will tell you what we have to do about it. I mean, it has to start with educating people. And for me, when I am educating people, I will tell you right now, I'm an educator, facilitator, and activist in no particular order. But when I am in the space of educating people, I always start with the things that happened before any of us who are here now got here. Because they're instructive of what happened when we arrived, what we kind of emerged into. Whether you were born in 1950, whether you were born in 1960, 1970, 1980, so on, right? What was happening when you got here and prior to when you got here is instructive of your experience being here. And so we have to start with the history. And I think for folks like Tawazi and Santiago and myself and others who really have focused a lot on the historical underpinnings of where we are right now in society, there are so many people who that has been obscured for them, right? Part of fascism is the whitewashing of history, the putting a nice veneer on history, retelling history, fighting history, right? Because, of course, if you know what Trump has been doing since he got into office, he's dictating for, the Smithsonian museums. What can be displayed? What can we say about slavery? What can we say about land grabs? The whole idea of manifest destiny was Christo-fascism, right? We are manifested by God to take this land by any means necessary, right? Literally stealing from the words of Malcolm X. But that is what happened, right? And so if people are not steeped in the history of
this nation, the history of the world, the context in which they emerged into the world in. It's really hard to get us to the point where they're now moving into a space of being disruptors or really focusing on what they can and should be doing in this moment that we find ourselves in. And if it, to me, doesn't include addressing capitalism, right, that has been normalized in this country, that some people should have way more than others, and some just don't deserve anything, and if you can find yourself somewhere in the middle of that, good on you. Kudos to you, right? Like, that is a part of the problem, but if we are not able to focus on the white supremacy of it all, none of it will change. I that is my thesis. That's my ministry.
Thank you
for coming to my TED Talk.
503. I would go to the Church of Tracy. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Lou. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay. So, good program, of course. I thought I would make a couple of resource questions or suggestions in terms of the topic. There's a great book. You both might have read it already. It's called Jesus and John Wayne. It's 2021. Kristen Dumez, D-U-M-E-Z, that details a number of the historical things before people were born and the current hijacking of Christianity, per se. In terms of education and what to do, there is a forum at Portland State, 6 p.m. tomorrow night, Wednesday, PSU Poblano Mexican Girl Cafe, on Trump and Christianity, Portland Gray Panthers. 503-222-2974 for contact info for that one. There's also, you might have seen, and you might have mentioned it already, Trump awarding, I guess, the Congressional Medal of Freedom, or the highest civilian honor, and he named three people. Rudy Giuliani is supposed to get one. Charlie Kirk, of course, is supposed to get one. And his newest one is Ben Carson. Ben Carson apparently was both anti-gay marriage and anti-abortion, as to his. So that it's the, you know, Presidential Medal of Freedom seems the opposite, like Orwell in 1984, of what the words mean.
Yeah.
There's also, you might have seen them, some of these already, but I just thought I'd mention them. These are films that deal with Christian nationalism. One pretty unseen called The Order. It came out last year. It's about white Aryan nations and northern Idaho. It's a true story, but it's a dramatization. So it's about, the Order was militant, armed assassins and bank robbers who thought white Aryan nations itself was too liberal or too moderate. So that's like a true story. There's a one that's a little bit older called Good Morning and Good Luck, which is about Edward R. Murrow fighting, and it's a dramatization, mm-hmm. against McCarthy in the 50s, which may predate some of the days when people are alive now, when they were born. And you may also, you might have already seen, it depends if you're actually going and supporting films in theaters, but there's a new one that, it's a blockbuster, but it's Paul Thomas Anderson, but it's about organizing on the left. And it has a revolutionary movement fighting against basically kind of a business version of the Klan, and it's a fictional story, but it's another battle, and it seems to be really, really left-wing. It even, the code word that people who used to be in, they call it French 75, but it's kind of like the weatherman, used to identify each other and find each other under a fascist government, is lyrics from Gil Scott-Heron's old song, which might have been played on KABU, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, which talks about white people and white power, and the code phrase is listing three or four of the old kind of white TV programs, like Beverly Hillbillies, Hooterville Junction, will no be longer be so relevant, and there's some swearing involved, of course, because black people are out in the streets looking for a brighter day. So there's three or four suggestions of possible things to look at on this theme that you talked about today. That's all. Bye.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
And could you tell us again when the forum is at Portland State? Oh,
they have disconnected already.
All right. Okay, we should add to this list of readings and other materials a documentary called
Bad Faith, which you can find right now on a number of places on the internet or on a streaming device. It's about specifically the rise of Christian nationalism in the United States. Very much worth your time. Tracy, we're up against the end of the show. Take us home.
I think there's another documentary called Ordinary Men, and it is parallels the rise of the Nazi police state that just invited regular people to be a part of that police state. Fascinating. It's going to mirror the rise of ICE. We're getting into the last few nice days of weather in Portland, Oregon. We also have the people standing in nonviolent ways at the South Waterfront. Let's do mutual aid. Let's make sure that people are not sitting in jail for misdemeanors because ICE started an incitement of violence. So get your mutual aid networks out. And, of course, if you can, donate to KBOO so we can continue bringing you commercial-free, unfiltered, uncapitalistic radio.
All right. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you once again to everyone who called in to be part of today's conversation. I'm sure this is not the last time we will visit this topic. And, again, be safe out there. If you do decide to go down and say hello to the ICE agents, please don't take the bait that they will offer you. This is too much information. On KBOO 90.7 FM, my name is Dave Proctor. For Tracy Simmons, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back at you next week. Over me.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your taste.